Okay, so this very simple practice, incredibly simple, doing nothing and just becoming aware of what's the quality of what's there, the quality in the body, what's alive in the body, what's the quality of the mind. I was teaching all last week in the British Columbia, and there was a non-residential retreat in Vancouver at UBC, and there was 180 people who came to practice for the Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Everybody's going home at night, coming back the next day. And I was invited a local friend teacher there to come and help out. Rachel Lewis is her name. She's really fun. She has really good dharma. And at some point she was talking to everybody and she was saying about meditation and the whole practice we do. She's like, this is plan B. You know, this is plan B. We're going for plan B here. Plan A was for everything to go the way we wanted. It didn't happen. It's not happening. You know? People are not saying what we want them to say. The institutions are not behaving as we would like. Society, all of this, you know, the family. So, you know, we had the plan, hey, it's supposed to go like this, everybody does that, I feel like this, it feels great. It's not working out. So then we come to meditation, you know, and we go for plan B. So what is plan B? So plan B is to meet what is there as it is, you know. And here, that's what I really enjoy about this practice, is we start with what's here. Yeah, you know, we come here to this location, and we discover the local conditions, you know. What's here now? Here, you know. And can that be met with, you know, these different qualities that we might learn to, you know, value, cultivate, invite, such as maybe some lightness of heart, you know. It's not easily gained, lightness of heart. You would think light should be readily available, you know. Usually it has to go through a few years of to find the lightness. We have to sit in pain for a little while, you know, trying all the other, you know, attitudes of mind, you know. I'll try opinion. It should not have happened like this. I'll try preferences, you know. It better happen like this. I'll try desiring it to be otherwise. I'll try rejecting what's there. I'll try numbing out. I'll try cynicism. No, not that satisfying. So we try a whole range of possibilities. It's almost infinite. And here we try what? Maybe another thing we're trying and discovering here is tenderness. Tenderness for the experience, the imperfect experience of being a human being. You know, maybe a little humor, a little playfulness becomes, we touch it one moment here or there, and this, it touches us. Oh, that's one way. Or tenderness, or calm. You know? These are some of the qualities we're developing. Oh, it's not feeling as I would like to feel in the body. You know, I had this image of meditation, you know. You know, I'm sitting there. And you're like, oh, you know, what about calmly making space for the crookedness, or the discomfort, you know? What about relaxing into, what about intimacy? I thought I would be only on it. Intimate with what is really pleasant and, you know, lovely. And here I'm invited to actually be intimate with discomfort. It's surprising, revolutionary, that's how I see it, and very liberating. Oh, it can be, you know, however it is, unresolved, this or that, you know. And I can maybe, you know, sit, rest in unresolvedness. I like English for this. You can make a word out of anything. So I can sit with unresolvedness, discomfortness. And I'm finding that maybe it's possible. You know, I didn't know before. I thought I had to get away from this. I had to solve. I had to, you know, and now I'm finding I can actually be with half-baked. You know, I don't know, you know. I can be with edgy. I can make space for, you know, this is, I'm talking about sensations in the body, but also conditions of the psyche and heart. And so we sit like this and we see, can it be okay that I haven't figured everything out, you know? Even with practice, I think we come closer and more, get to be more intimate with things that we would never think we could actually allow to be known fully, that we would fear or hate, you know, powerlessness. That's how far we'll go in our travel, you know. Meet powerless. I'm powerless in front of this. Oh. And in my practice, it taught me to actually relax in powerlessness, because it happens to human beings. Uncontrollability, uncertainty. Amazing that the heart mind has that capacity to relax, and that allow even for that to be there. Not easy. It might take a few minutes of practice. How can these things make the heart vibrant, you know, instead of make it fall apart or close down? So this friend, Rachel Lewis, she was funny because at some point, I think she might have said she got it from another teacher, but I thought it was really funny. She's giving the instruction for the meditation. She's so now feeling the body sitting, breathing. Now you see some calm comes in, allowing the sounds to come in and out. And there's some calm coming in the heart. Now that would be the time you would start fretting about stuff. You know, giving the opposite instruction. Now you would get hooked on some theme and really like think a lot about it now. That would be the time where you would start doing this. I thought she had such a sense of humor. You know, when we say, if something comes to mind and you start obsessing or you start being compulsive about a theme, just see if you could let it go. It's like, now maybe it's the time you... But it highlights, you know, the lack of wisdom that we have. made me laugh. Sometimes when I come back from traveling, I report a little bit on things heard and seen. I think that's might be a good way to... So there was this weekend retreat, and then we had almost a week, 6 days, I think, on the beautiful organic farm on Salt Spring Island. Maybe some of you know this island in BC, close to Vancouver. Beautiful farm, like all like kind of hilly like this. And you know, you do your walking in the rows of, well, now it was kale and lettuce. And you know, sometimes the little sheeps come by, baby sheeps. They have a name in English?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a lamb is a baby sheep. Oh. My lack of knowledge is going to be broadcasted all over the internet. So the little lamb would come, you know, and the llamas in the back, and the chickens. It's very a beautiful place to practice meditation, to be on retreat, because it seems like there's a very wholesome relationship between humans and earth, huh? It's growing, and at the meal they say, oh, we just plucked this, is it something called nettles? Nettle? Anyway, we just either made tea or put them in a salad. You know, we just plucked them this morning, you know, for lunch. You know. It was very beautiful. It was a LGBTQI plus retreat. So queer, trans folks, gender non-conforming, non-binary people, gender hackers, gender benders, the good crowd. And it was really beautiful. We were all practicing together, you know. And what I enjoyed about it is kind of almost a sense of developing a kind of a queer dharma. You know, the dharma, how it travels to cultures. And so there is a Tibetan dharma, you know, that Tibetan Buddhism that was born out of the culture of Tibet, and then Zen Buddhism that came out of maybe Japan or Korea, and then there's a Western Buddhism. We're practicing this here, you know, and emerging might be a queer dharma, beautiful dharma where the example, the essence of the Buddhism is there, but it's seen through the experience of through an experience of you know, the trans experience, or through the experience of a non-binary being, you know, non-queer. I'm tired, so genderqueer. I mix up the word. And I was sitting there, and you know, we were talking about the practice, and I was like, oh, I think there could be something that would emerge that, you know, maybe people who are not under that huge umbrella of LGBTQ, maybe they would want to benefit from the queer wisdom, the queer dharma wisdom. I see that coming one day. It's a beautiful thing, huh? Mm-hmm. I was teaching with Anushka Fernando Pule. Maybe you've heard her. She has really beautiful teaching online. And she's my main colleague I teach with often. And because it was the LGBTQ retreat, she was she used many examples. I did too. But one of them was very, I thought was very kind of fun. And you know, an image that the Buddha, if he had lived today, I think would have really enjoyed and maybe come up with himself. But Anushka was describing being in Amsterdam for Gay Pride, maybe last year or something like this. And she was saying that it was really interesting how, you know, the canals in Amsterdam? And so they have floats, you know, like they have in any pride, but they're really floating. And they have these the challenge there is bridges, like very low bridges in Amsterdam, and so the floats, the way the form they created to make the floats really like grandiose, fabulous, very, you know, proud pride, is through inflating the kind of different things they're showing, you know. And so, like, big characters come up, you know, inflated, and she said the arms are going like this, and hair, and they have, like, guns of confettis, you know. And then suddenly they hit the bridge, and the whole thing collapses, and everybody ducks down, you know. And then they go under the bridge, and whoa, the float reappears, you know. And one float will be a big, I don't know, character, and another one will be a kind of a building, you know, inflated. And she was comparing this to our mind states, you know, to the, as we sit during a sit here for 20 minutes or so, or if we sit regularly, you know, at home, you know, we'll see different kind of floats, you know, expressions come out, different colors and different formations, really. You know, the Buddha has this image. I use it often. You might have heard me, the image of the banana tree. Do you know this image of the banana tree? Where, you know, the I think the Buddha says something like, oh, there's a person who wants to build something strong. They go in the woods to find really good wood, hard wood, and they see a banana tree, and they're like, oh my God, you know. I don't know if they say, oh my God, but adaptation here. So they're, oh wow, big leaves, big flower, big fruit. We're going to have really good wood in there, good hard wood, and start axing the banana tree to find that it's empty at the core. Right? It's only fibers. There's no hard wood there. There's nothing solid to that. And in this way, the Buddha used the image and say, you know, when we sit here and we come with the axe of mindfulness, of attention, what we'll discover is that what seems so solid and real and important and is actually has a nature of being empty at the core. You know, it's formations, productions of the mind. You know, it's never going to work out for me. You know, if we pay attention to this, it seems like it's describing a solid reality. And if we pay attention, maybe we'll discover that met with tenderness, with attention, it kind of dissolves and something else appears. And so he uses the image of the banana tree trunk, and Anushka uses the modern queer image of the floats, you know, where suddenly there's this big thing that appears, you know. And as we sit here, that's what happens. You know? We're sitting here, and, oh, I have to become a monastic, you know, I should have, you know. Next life, I will, you know. It appears like this. And there's a big construction, you know. That might not be the exact thought you had as you were sitting here. It might have been something else, you know, about dinner. A small little float. Dinner. And here, so that's the lightness of heart I was talking about. So here we learn to sit and have both tenderness and lightness of heart, seeing the different productions of the mind, you know, how it comes up, you know, takes the form of fear, of worry, of resentment, takes the form of expectation, hope, you know, and we learn to just sit in the middle of these different formations. And the formations sometimes are conditionings, huh? Like old messages we got, either directly or very kind of subtly, you know, little messages we got and got again and got again and finally really got it, interiorized the message, you know, and then it appears as we sit. So there was when I was talking to one friend, a man, trans man, and he was saying, I think, if I remember well, it was about kind of apologizing a lot, you know. And he was like, I've been socialized as a girl, you know. I'm a man, but I've definitely been socialized for many years as a girl. So I see that conditioning. It just keeps reappearing, you know. I need to apologize, or something like this. And so as we sit here, these formations also appear. And what we have the chance to do is instead of just believing every one of these patterns, thoughts, messages, you know, instead of believing every one of them and acting on them and being in that, being born in that kind of reality, you know, it being very solid, we actually learn to see through and maybe not entertain. There's a space that opens, space of choice, you know, in the recognition, in the mindfulness, saying, oh, here's that view or conditioning. Oh, I actually don't have to believe this. This is an old, mistaken message that was brought by society. You know, maybe the sense that I'm unworthy in a way, you know. That might be an old Judeo-Christian message, you know, that was not the most beautiful that Jesus brought, you know, maybe not what he said or meant. And so that's why we sit here, to see these different formations and, you know, meet them with really good allies, mindfulness, aware of, rather than duped by, fooled by. So aware of, tender towards, and maybe a certain lightness of, oh, look at that, comes back. That kind of obsession, that kind of story, telling the story in this way, you know. And so in this way we become awake to the patterning, the conditionings. So that's awake, the awakening of the Buddha, and maybe eventually getting some freedom, you know. Maybe it arises, but we don't have to follow, buy into, you know, but just see that formation as an ephemeral float. Oh, look at that. The creation of the mind. I think that's a lot of the practice we do. And so we start, I think, inhabiting an inner world of kindness, rather than an inner world of a kind of addiction, fascination for every thought, belief, constant, systematic belief, systematically believing every formation, you know, to actually allow the formation to take place, enjoy it, appreciate its beauty, complexity, strangeness. But not fall trap to it. Comments, questions, nuances, applications. So there's a lot of clarifying that happens, and that could be maybe a description of the process of meditation. We clarify how to hold stuff, how to be in relationship with what comes up, you know. Sorry.
When you were talking, I was thinking about a phrase that from Thich Nhat Hanh that I read. He says that human beings are rivers of sensation. We're like a river of sensation.
Yes.
All the time. And when I think about that, it helps me to accept and receive those sensations.
Yeah. Yeah.
From emotions.
So river of sensations, river of emotions, of moods.
It's a flowing.
Yeah.
I think there is a flowing. I appreciate it.
Mm.
Yeah. It's impermanent, so you can.
Yeah.
Tu peux avoir l'espoir que ça va partir if you don't like
when
it.
When it's unpleasant.
Yeah. Appreciate it a bit.
Yeah.
And then you let it go.
Mm. So sitting here, we clarified this, huh? That the insight that the human body, for example, is a river of sensation. It's not clear for us at the beginning. We might think it's me, I'm this body, you know. And while we sit in meditation, we discover this. Oh, what I call hand is a series of field of tingling, you know. And this whole body. Oh, it's what is body? What is body when eyes are closed and outside of my idea, concept of the body? Oh, it's a moment of expansion and then a moment of contraction. Oh. You know, when I thought I was stuck with my body the whole time, I'm discovering that there's a river. It's a living river. Yeah. And then, you know, the river, we notice also the river of emotions and mood. Oh, grumpy. Grumpy passing by. Whoops. Suddenly, you know, amused. Amused, gone. Not tight. Opinionated, you know. And it moves like this. And the freedom is to allow that river also to pass. Several rivers in the teaching talks in this way about several rivers. So one river also that you might be interested in, like if you look around, if you play with just looking around, with moving the eyes around and seeing, you'll see also there's another river that is alive. It's the river of making sense of things, of naming things, or perception. So as that my eyes move around, I recognize door, column, window, you know, like I cannot not see these things. I cannot not interpret, perceive the world. There's an organization of the world. In meditation, we become also aware of this. That's even a step, I think, more subtle. And so as we do this, there's an organization of the world. And one of the ways we get really to suffer and get caught and confused is we take every perception to be a reality, a description of reality. So I might, my eyes might travel like this and I see a face, one of your face. It reminds me of somebody who was a little nasty to me, maybe. And then I go, ah, this person is like this. I know that type of person, you know? And so that's a mistaken view here. But I'm not aware of this because my mindfulness hasn't gone that far, you know, to actually become really aware of the construction, you know. And depending on the mood I'm in, you know, 1 week I can sit here and say, ah, people, so annoying. You know, I look and people are so annoying. You know, it appears to me as the truth. And then next week I'll come and I'll be more in a different mood. So beautiful, people come to practice wisdom and compassion. People are so beautiful. Huh? So in this way, we inhabit world we don't even know, you know. But the waking up of the Buddha is partly this, waking up to even that, how the world is constructed, how things are presented, and not exactly as they are, but as they're perceived, maybe in the moment, or this week, or, you know, how self is perceived is an interesting one. You know, how do you hold that concept of self, that idea of self? You know, many people hold it as unworthy. You know, it's a construction of the mind, an empty construction, a banana tree trunk, afloat. Yet we can believe it to be true and real and solid for a whole lifetime, you know, starting by hating ourselves and going through the whole few decades, or thinking I'm above, you know, depending maybe of, you know, the different circumstances, gender, socio-economic means, or this and that. Somebody could easily think they're better. They do. They get elected as president. You know? And they see the world through this. I know, I'm better. I'm worth something, others not. And so here we did this deep, deep work, years probably of practice, to clarify, you know, what is a vision? What is an impression? What is a sense of? What is a perception? And what is reality? And we do this by coming back to the kind of what's the building blocks of reality. So we come here and we sit and it's like, what's actually happening? You know, what is really happening? There is an experience of gravity. This is true. This is unnegotiable. That's kind of a basic fact of life. Like, that's clarifying perception. There is gravity. There's no doubt about this. There is breath. this is true. You know, so we kind of we can have a whole story. We come here and we say, let's start from the really, really like basic blocks of reality. What's really happening? There is a body. It's breathing. There is attention. There is consciousness. There is something that knows. It's touch. Touches things. There is moods. These are true. Sometimes there is joy, sometimes sadness, sometimes shame, sometimes acceleration, sometimes discouragement. And we notice that in the moment. You know, we let go of a lot of our habitual ways to perceive. You know, we let go of the timeline. To me, that's amazing that we actually can do this. You know, I come here, this time of my day, this is my meditation class, after I'm going to go home and do this, or I'm working tonight, and I, you know, in my life, I'm at this age, and this is where I should be, and this is unfortunately where I am. And I have a whole timeline, and I hope, you know, life is going to respect the timeline now, you know, and this should happen at that, you know, and this, and I hope, and we come here, and we drop the timeline. Freed from the oppression of the storyline. It's just a body sitting here, breathing. I don't have to be caught in the story. That's really liberating, because after I might go back in the story, but knowing that it's not absolutely true, and it's not the only take, the only angle, it's not that solid. I put the axe of mindfulness in there. I know, the timeline is just a perception of reality. Can go back to it, it's useful in so many ways, but I don't have to live only there. I can actually drop that timeline and be here in this moment, just a breathing body, experiencing a mood, and learning how to hold that caringly, lightly. And then that would be the time to cling to the timeline again. Go back to the story. Hang on to it. Believe it firmly. But it's true. It's about me, and this is what happened. And this will happen. You know? So we learn to have some flexibility of mind. Pliability is the word, the old word that is used, or the way it's translated in English. Pliability of mind. We're not stuck in one version of reality. It's very liberating, you know, to discover that this is Earth, sitting on Earth. You know, yeah, it's about me, but it's also just a lump of Earth. You know, sensitive little lump of Earth. liberated from moi and having to take care of moi. You know, just air passing through, a play of elements. You know, is another way the Buddha was teaching us to release the single view of reality. Hey, what's going on? A bunch of elements. Air, fire, water, earth. You know, become attentive, you'll feel it. Fluidity, cohesion, you know, weight, density, warmth, cold. Give back the elements to the universe. You don't have to identify, fuse with it. It's very liberating. Okay, so many things mentioned. But the idea would be just to bring mindfulness in, to kind of release a little bit, question the views. Question the views. Shall we try it a little bit? You know, you can do this standing up if you want for a few seconds or minutes or at any time during the sitting. It's totally okay to stand up if it becomes uncomfortable in some ways. It's okay to grab a chair, sit on a chair. So we're practicing being awake, sensitive to what's happening. Allowing the river of sensations to be known, to be experienced. The river of sounds and silences. Becoming aware and allowing the different formations in the heart, the different floats to come by. Sometimes it's the float of boredom. Other times it's the float of anxiety. Sometimes it's the float of joy, calm. We don't have to produce anything, to make anything, or look for anything to happen. If you are expecting, desiring something, become aware of this. That's a state of mind that can be known. Don't be duped by it. Oh, wanting something else to happen. Feels like this. Sometimes the heart is contracted, sometimes it's light, it can be spacious, the mind or the heart. Sometimes it's upset. If you want to, if it feels right, if it's helpful, you can make the breath kind of a home base, a refuge, and experience the world from there, from the breath. letting sounds be known from the rising and falling of the abdomen, letting the mood be known from the attention to the breath. Notice the river-like nature of what you're experiencing. If it's thoughts, they are floating away like a river. If it's a mood, it's alive. It's moving through. It's a sensation also, it's alive, it's tingling, it's pressing. an impression that it's too long, too short, or this or that, notice. It's a mirage-like impression, an appearance. It appears like this. Mind will easily slips back in its old patterns, and so not recognizing the float but being on it, we can become aware of what's at play here, what groove the mind got in. We're practicing being lucid, clearly knowing what's happening in the mind, in the body. if you find that your mind is got stuck in some stories, some knots of its own making, entangled in its own creations, become aware of this. It's not a fault. Huh? It's not like it should not happen. It's mostly that we're curious about it. Oh, look at that. The mind created a story and got caught in it. We want to become aware of that process of entrapment. It's not like it shouldn't happen. We can even rejoice. Oh, I have a chance to notice how it works. Notice how we can be identified with a mood or an emotion. Think it's us, it's me. It's happening to me. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from affliction, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, in freedom from hostility, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. Okay. Merci. Thanks for the studio for welcoming us, Julie, in the studio. As you come out, you see, as usual, there's two boxes there. One is to support the studio, who has to stay alive, is a living, dynamic thing, dependent. So thank you for considering this. And there's also a box for the teacher, who also needs, you know, shelter, medicine, foods. What else? Clothing. All these things that are not easy to get. So thank you for considering this. Also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you know this organization, True North Insight, who promotes these events and organizes retreats. It's a non-profit that organizes maybe 18 retreats or so a year and offer classes here and there and supports the organization of all this. It's a beautiful organization. It's been there for, I think, 15 years now. So this during these 2 or 3 weeks that we're in the middle of now, we're actually raising funds for a scholarship for marginalized groups or for people who are in the margins of sometimes of society, either because of their minority status or their invisibility of value we give to them or don't give to them. And so we're trying to make it possible for some of them to come on retreat, because that might be one of the hindrances to come on retreat is financial resources. And so collectively we're trying to raise funds for scholarship. Other things we're doing, so you know, is now half of our board is, we're very proud that half of our board is people of color. Because we've noticed that on our retreats, there's the absence of a, you know, vibrant community of people of color, and we've received that feedback, and so changes we're making is the board now is has people of color on it, and we're training people of color teachers, and we're offering this year at True North a people of color retreat. And when we announced it, very quickly it became a full, maybe a year prior to the date, it was a full house. So it meant that it means there's a need for that. And, some of the folks who would like to come and don't have the means, we're raising funds. So if you want to do that, I think through the website of True North Insight, you could go and donate as much as you would like to support this. So we can become a very vibrant community that is accessible to everyone. So that's something that is happening now with True North Insight. So thank you. Have a good week. I might see you. When do I come back?
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks? Sometime. I'll be back. Okay. 17? All right. It's a date. Thank you. Could you hear well?
Yeah, it was a challenge.
Yeah.
This helps a lot.
Okay.
Good. I'm always advocating for people with physical disabilities.
Great.
Especially hearing impairment is difficult,
yeah.
So people don't remember it. Yeah. But that's great.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.